This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you are listening to Hear Me Roar. Co-hosting with me tonight is the absolutely stunning Sonia.
Hello.
Hello, gorgeous girl.
Hello, lovely woman.
Isn't this so lovely? Just the two of us? Lovely
yes,
ladies.
I know.
Tonight we're going to be catching up with Ian Harvey. Now, some people might know him. He's the well-known comedian. He's performing at Gasworks here. And he was born a female and has transitioned to being a man. So interesting to catch up with Ian. And also later on this hour we're going to be talking to Rachel Cook. Now, a lot of people might know her through the queer media that she's worked in. She's worked in the media for over a decade. She's won awards for a short film and her radio programs. She was also the author of Who's Afraid of Cheeky Biscuit, which I guess a lot of people would know from the MCV mag.
It's a good mag.
It is a good mag, and that was a great column. So we're really looking forward to talking to her about her book because she's written a book called Closets Are for Clothes. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. Tonight we're catching up with Ian Harvey, the well-known comedian who was born a female and has transitioned to a male. Ian has performed his unique comedy all over the world. He's performing here in Melbourne for the Comedy Festival. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
That's the formal part done. That's it. How do you identify? You're a gorgeous-looking man.
Well,
male. I don't know what to say. I'm just going to say,
No.
Can I say, girlfriend or girl?
Thanks for saying that. How do I identify? I definitely identify as a man. I don't necessarily identify as male because I kind of, I personally reserve that word for someone who is born biologically. It's like a science term for me. And that man is something that you get to create. It's a more of a gender word, something you get to create. And I'm definitely a man, but not the kind that you might think.
You're a special kind.
I'm a special man.
How hard's that been? It's been easy. Like telling mum and dad, was it? Did you like pass the potatoes? By the way, I want a doodle.
Actually, you know, actually, this weekend is actually, it wasn't anything. I thought it was appropriate to write them a letter because I didn't want to just lay it on them and then have them standing there, sitting there with potatoes hanging out of their mouth. So I basically just said in a letter, this is how I felt my whole life and this is how I recall it my whole life from when I was a little kid to when I was a teenager to when I was in my 20s. And this is why I drank so much. This is why I did drugs so much.
Any
this is
bloody
like,
excuse.
No. Like I really struggled with this stuff and this is what I felt like when I tried to kiss boys. This is what I felt like when I, you know, in my body and I just went through everything and just laid it out and I gave it to them on Easter.
The holiday
after
season.
Easter dinner.
Here's some chocolate and a byway.
Yeah, we had a big Easter dinner, and then I tucked away these letters in my parents' bedroom, one for each of my parents, and gave one to my brothers. Already knew. I kind of, you know, I use them as a buffer, so they knew ahead of time, you know, so that I would have some support that, and my parents would also have some support when they if they got really freaked out. But they were really amazing, and my mother. I remember her saying this thing to me years and years and years ago about how she would keep our family together no matter what it took.
You're testing them, aren't you?
And I completely have tested it. I've come out twice. The first time I told my like girls. Second time I you know told them I'm a dude. I'm a dude. And so and it really I tested that her theory of keeping and they're amazing. They really are loving and not everybody's parents are like that. A lot of people get shunned and I have the most amazing parents, but. I did think it was really funny in hindsight that I left the letter on Easter, kind of, you know, a rebirth and or
oh, you know, very Christian. So. But you know, normally you give your parents chocolate, not you know, like a right. letter.
Normally,
gee, I'm going to change the.
There's
whole.
Nothing normal really about me, so.
Well, let's talk about the really important things: toilets.
Right, that's the important thing.
This is it. Girls' toilets and boys' toilets, right? Now, girls' toilets are definitely dirtier, aren't they?
Girls?
Girls' toilets are dirtier.
I don't think so. No, have you been in the men's rooms?
I have. We go to girls' clubs.
Well,
I have to disagree.
I think men's rooms are far filthier.
Really?
Yeah, they just have bad aim. They just, you know, whiz all over the place.
And they do.
Yeah. And they're whizzing into urinals, which splash. And splash not only on the floor, but on their clothes. And you know what I mean? There's just, yeah.
It's a bit of sharing going on. My co-host, David, who for Friday Drive, you met him just prior in the studio. Gorgeous man. He's got this great idea that he wants to put battleships down there. And actually aim at the battleships.
You sunk my battleship.
Yes. Do you think
like
that
the
might
old game.
Do you think that might help?
With the smell? I don't think they're going to help with the smell or the splash factor either. But the restroom, I do have to say, the last time that I used the ladies' room, I was in New York City and I was at a big costume party and I was there with a friend of mine. I had to go to the bathroom. I still had the girls with me.
The girls were
my
still
chest.
On. Yeah.
And so I could sort of rightfully still go into the ladies' room and go to the bathroom. So I was just standing in line. There was a big line snaking out of the ladies' room, and my friend standing next to me. And I could hear this woman screaming in the ladies' room that there was a man in line to get into the ladies' room. And I kept thinking, like, she's obviously talking about me.
Yeah.
I was a very masculine female person. So I turned to my friend and said, "What's her problem?" She goes, "I don't know. Maybe it's a safety issue." And I'm like, "A safety issue? Like I'm gonna attack her? Like I'm 30 people in line here? Like I'm gonna 29 more people, bitch, and your ass is mine." Really? Like, it's so crazy to me. And then I made the switch to the men's room, and I still get nervous in the men's room. There is some safety, there's incredible safety issues for trans people. And maybe not me as much as some others because I'm so quote unquote passable, which I kind of hate that terminology, but people don't necessarily look at me and as suspect as a trans person. But in my head, I am. That I am suspect. I think that they can tell somehow, like my pee sounds different than their pee hitting the toilet. So I'm in there the whole time. I'm just sort of rocking back and forth going, "I've got a secret," you know? And I don't know what would I do if I were found out in the men's room?
What are they going to do? I mean, they'll have to open the door and say, "Oh, hello."
I mean, there are instances where people have been attacked in situations like that. And my thought is, what would I do? Like, I would just be like, "You wouldn't hit a dude with a vagina, would you?" And then I'd like run as fast as I could, hopefully confusing them long enough that I could just get out of there. But yeah, it's
a little bit of flash dance I think wouldn't go astray.
<Yeah. laughs>
just bob your head down, flick it up for the toilet bowl water, right? Do your little flash dance thing, and they're not gonna go there, are they?
No probably not with a flash dance. they would be stunned with the flash dance.
Can you do it? Can you do the flash dance?
No. Not from memory. I would need some training.
Can you dance at all?
I have danced a little bit. I danced on cast in a burlesque comedy show with Margaret Cho in New York off Broadway for like 9 weeks.
Show off.
And she and myself and about 8 others that were supporting cast to her. And we did a big burlesque opening number with fans, like feather fans. It was really fun. It totally tapped into like my girlish side that I wouldn't have ever let myself sort of go there before. But I learned this whole fan dance and with all these other people, and it was absolutely glorious. It was really fun.
Did you write your parents a letter about that one?
No, but
I've come out. I like girls. Now, hang on. I want to be a dude. And by the way, now I like feathers.
Right. Right.
Maybe that's
a lot of coming out. You know, someone said, do you date men? Who do you shag? Who are you interested in? And it's funny because I wouldn't want to. There's a part of me that's like, I wouldn't want to have to come out again and tell my parents, "Now I'm gay." Like now,
I dare you.
I like girls. Now I'm a dude. Yeah. I like feathers, and now I'm gay.
You got the whole.
that's a lot of coming out.
Look, I'd hold that one off for Christmas. The Christmas letter, maybe Santa brings a special letter. Right?
Yeah,
everybody's been busy.
Yeah.
Now talking about the girls. You've had the girls removed. The girls have gone somewhere else.
I went to, actually, I was in Melbourne 2 years ago this time of year, maybe a little, 2 years ago and maybe a month. I was here and performing at the Palais with Margaret, and 2 days later, we flew back to Los Angeles, and I then flew directly to drove to San Francisco, yeah, and had chest surgery. And so I had triple D's.
Wow.
I'm not a large frame person. I'm fairly narrow frame person, but I had some big girls that I was hauling around. Yes, I did.
A lot of people find that really, disconcerting, the whole girls being taken away.
I get two comments mostly. One is women wish that I could have donated them to them.
Of course.
And men are like, wow, if I had boobs like that, I'd play with them all day long. You know, those are the two sentiments.
They don't work here, though.
Yeah, no. I think they cringe if I were to tell them, you know, the gory details about incisions and sutures and things like that. But that generally, I think that people can somehow relate on some level. There's, you know, women out there getting breast reductions or augmentations. Everybody has a little something about themselves that they maybe wish that they could alter about their bodies. I mean, even right now, if you could snap your fingers and change something about your body, what would you change?
Oh, it'd have to be my eyes.
So, really?
Yeah, I got like bags. Don't look. Look away. No. Look away. I don't think I'm hideous. I'm hideous.
But that's so interesting because that's something that in your head that you have about yourself that you see, but that I absolutely don't see.
Oh, thank you.
But it's perception. It's like self-perception. Mm. So I think on some level, everybody... Actually, I don't think anybody out there in the world feels 100% okay about their bodies. And I actually believe that everybody out there is a little bit trans. And I say this because...
You want some more friends?
Yeah, I want some more friends. And actually, but to create community, because I think on a core feeling level that we all feel the same, that we don't quite feel enough in some way, feminine enough or masculine enough. And we often think about the things that we might like to do to change those things. And I think about women who maybe are small breasted or small chested, and somehow they don't feel feminine enough because their chest isn't large enough or to their liking. So they get a breast augmentation to feel more feminine. And I think, how is that any different than me wanting to take mine off to feel more masculine? On a core feeling level, those are the same feelings. What the outcomes are and what we decide to do about them, it's totally different. But that's why I was like, I walk around and I see people who, you know, especially in LA, you know, who have like massive, massive work done to be uber feminine or uber masculine.
Look at that. They look wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it does.
A bit wrong.
Yeah. There's some really bad work out there. But but ultimately, those feelings are very similar. And so that's why I think, you know, people like Cher, totally trans, a bio trans. You know,
yeah,
Dolly Parton. Oh, God, love Dolly.
Dolly. Have you met Dolly?
I haven't. I would love
Bette Midler?
I did.
Oh, you lucky thing.
For just a half a second.
That's okay. It's more than I have.
Yeah, it was actually, that was at that costume party I went to. It was the toilet incident. Oh. And it was at a big hotel in New York. And it was a big tree benefit that she was having that... Stevie Nicks sang and Willie Nelson. And
such a show.
No. I was nobody. I was one of like thousands that were there. But it was a benefit show for, but it was really exciting to meet some of those people.
Just
even
being
for a second.
The same room.
Yeah.
So cool.
And I'm a Stevie Nicks fanatic. So when she was on stage, my mouth was.
You were dribbling, weren't you?
I was.
Your girlfriend wouldn't have thought that was very attractive.
No, probably not.
Now, where are you playing now?
I'm playing at Gasworks.
You're playing at Gasworks, and that's on. You're on tonight.
I played last night, tonight, and all the way through this every night through Sunday night, and every night shows at 8:30, I believe, and and it's I think you have all the details there better. You can get tickets online, or you can call Gasworks directly.
Oh, it's 8:45. You're going to be 15 minutes early, but get there at 8:30 anyway. I want to get down there and check you out. But now we're going to get to the really important part of the show.
Okay,
it's
which
called
is?
Celebrity Grill.
Celebrity Grill?
Yeah, we'll just pretend you're a celebrity.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I qualify.
Doesn't matter. I'll work with what I've got. Now, it's a quick question thing, and it's like a yes or no or a whatever. Okay, ready? Picnic or five-star dining?
Picnic.
Why?
I just think it's more organic and more, you could get to be yourself more.
Okay. Yeah. My horse or camel?
Oh, camel.
Why the camel?
Because I've never done it.
Oh, you're a good boy. Feathers or sequins? We know this answer now.
It's a tough call. Actually, because I have an affinity for both, actually. But I'm going to say feathers.
I thought so. Beer or wine?
Neither, actually.
You non-drinker?
I'm a non-drinker. Not for 17 years.
Okay, so I'll have to say cordial or lemonade?
Oh, lemonade.
Okay. And helicopter or jetpack?
Helicopter.
Oh, see, I'd go the jetpack. You can buy them
I've
now.
I've always wanted to be a helicopter pilot.
Have you?
Yeah.
You
I've, always do it? Want, I've always wanted to just, like, hover, you know, like, in one of... Yeah, I just... I've always been fascinated.
Well, you've got some time on your hands. You've got a couple of hours before your show.
Yeah, what do I have to do?
An hour or so. I don't know what you've got. Now, get down to Gasworks Art Park. Come and see Ian. He's a super dude. Tonight, ongoing till the 4th of April. Bookings are online at Gasworks. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks so much for having me.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Hear Me Roar.
Oh, wow. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, we're actually got next week with some of the Globe girls, I think, are coming in to Hear Me Roar to say hello, to tell us about Globe, because I actually didn't know much about it at all.
That's a great idea.
That's probably because I'm not very bright, though.
Wow. Are you business?
No.
You know,
look, I've actually, since I've heard about them, I've actually thought it's probably perfect for me because I'm not a clubber girl. I don't like doing the clubby thing.
Yeah.
So for me to go out and have a drink and network and talk, that would be actually quite
suit.
Nice.
Yep.
I look great in a dress.
Good
though.
Networking.
I'm a dress girl. You a dress or a suit girl?
A dress up, dress down.
Like to frock it up?
If possible, if the occasion calls for it.
Okay. Well, you are listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings with 100 Days and 100 Nights from 2007. You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9 with Sue.
Sonia, you're so professional. I'm not used to this. I'm going to dump the other girls, I think.
Get rid of her.
I'm going to dump them. I'm dumping them all. Oh, my God. I feel like I've stepped it up a mark. Now, you are listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9, and we're about to talk to Rachel Cook. Rachel has worked in the queer media for over a decade, and she's won awards for short film and her radio programs. I bet you she's not as good as us, Sonia.
But that's a nice way to talk about your guests.
Yeah, I don't care. She's at a distance that so she can't hit me. She's also the author of Who's Afraid of Cheeky Biscuit, which appeared in MCV for 9 years, which is astounding. I didn't realise it was that long. And tonight, though, we're going to talk to her mainly about her book Closets Are for Clothes, A Queer History of Australia. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're going to hit me?
Well, the chair actually is on rollers, so if I wanted to, I could scoot over there and smack you one.
It'd be like geriatric sort of roller derby, wouldn't it? That could make a go, couldn't it, roller derby?
Who would play you? Drew Barrymore?
Who would play me?
Drew Barrymore?
No, Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yeah.
But a little bit, you know.
A little bit.
About 5-10 years ago.
Well, the interesting thing about roller derby is actually they're not all spring chickens, which, a lot of the girls are actually, well over 30. Yeah. Very encouraging.
I couldn't do it. I'd cry. I literally, if someone hits me, I cry. You know, I'm a big sook, basically.
Hopefully
I get nally.
You're not getting hit too often.
That's the point of it, isn't it?
It's attention seeking.
Actually, yeah, that's probably the problem. Now, you wrote Closets of a Clothes. Why did you write it?
Well, actually, I was commissioned by the publisher Black Dog Books, who'd been trying to get this idea off the ground for a couple of years. And they heard about me and my writing and background, and also I had a background studying queer theory and history some years ago at Melbourne Uni. So I had a little bit of a background in the history and also obviously a keen interest in all things queer. So we sat down, had a few meetings and decided that was an idea that I was interested in following up as well. And that's really how it started. And from their point of view, it started because they're actually... they write these wonderful history books which do really well in schools, and their idea is, probably I think for most of us, if you remember history, the books tended to be pretty dry. and made
boring.
And history is such a fascinating subject, and it was lost on so many of us because of the way the books were written. So their idea is they have these books that are written in sort of pseudo novel style, so they bring characters in who may be real or may not be, and it's just a really great way of teaching history to young adults.
Because I was bored. I was bored to tears in history. I mean, it was like 1865, you remember something, and it's that was history classes. And it didn't seem to mean anything at all.
Well, I guess, you know, the big thing about it was that it was never personalised. So it might even have been history that you were – fairly recent history that was perhaps only 50 years earlier, but it was still seemed so far removed and so distant. And that's what this publisher, they do with their books, is they bring these characters in to tell the story, so that makes the stories alive and much more interesting, I think.
Sarah Waters is a bit like that, I think, with her novels.
True, her historical novels,
really,
yeah.
They really are interesting, the time periods she looks at. Like Night Watcher is set after the Second World War in the blitzed part of London. And it's a history you don't really hear about.
And it's interesting, isn't it, with Sarah Waters novels, because you often, after reading the novels, then you'll become interested in that point of history, and you'll do a little bit of home research yourself.
Yeah, come on. True. What about the title, Closets of Her Clothes?
Mm.
How did you come up with that one?
That was the publisher. Basically, the book was designed to go into schools, and obviously it's had a wider reach than that, which has been great. And they wanted something... I didn't know anything about how you market, you know, books to kids. And basically you have to do things that are catchy. You've got to have things that sort of sound like slogans. There was a few different titles, and basically booksellers said certain titles they won't even touch. So this one, I did a bit of market research amongst the booksellers and actually groups of teenagers. And that title by far was the winner. And you know what's interesting? It's had a couple of reviews in Straight Press, and both reviews have talked about how much they love the title.
It's a great title. Mm. It is a really good title.
Oh, it's good to hear that.
I was just wondering whether, you know, you were like closet phobic. I like a good closet. I was in the closet. I was very comfortable. It was plush. All right. Oh. My closet was rather nice in there. It was lovely.
My closet was just one of those.
The bifold door?
Yeah. No, the ones you just make up.
Oh, the IKEA kind of. Or the canvassy kind of ones.
Bit of string.
Were you in there
nail.
Long? Were you a long time closet? You were. Were you a long time closet girl? Or were you a little bit?
No, I think I was more of a sort of the clothes rack. It was all quite exposed.
Oh, you're much better than me then. Now, let's talk about some of the stuff in the book. Now, you talk about the whole legal persecution through history, which is really fascinating. Now, there were people going through electroshock, and once we were threats to national security, which I think is absolutely hilarious, but it's actually quite serious. Now, what did they think we were going to do, put glitter in the State Department or something? Or what were we going to do, put flannel shirts through... Well, they could make that school uniforms. What was this?
It's a very good question, as in what were they thinking we were going to do? Well, the first thing they thought was that we were actual security risks because we had compromised characters.
Oh.
So, and it sounds quite highfalutin now, but in the 1950s, ASIO kept files on known homosexuals and people who they suspected of maybe being homosexuals and people they suspected of fraternising with suspected homosexuals, because the fear was that... possibly if you gave a homosexual a job in a security agency or for the government and the enemy got to them, the gays and lesbians...
You'd have sex with them and then you'd give them all the information.
But didn't that actually happen in Britain?
What?
The spy networks in Britain, and they actually had to go and extradite themselves to Soviet Russia. So there was a link there.
They
were worried about the communist threat.
Yeah, and it didn't often take much of a link for them for these things to be blown out of proportion. I mean, you know, in 1958, the New South Wales police commissioner said that homosexuality was the greatest threat to Australian society. You know, this is not poverty,
no.
not violence, but homosexuality. And the amount of the lengths they went to police homosexual activity were astounding.
It is astounding. I can't even imagine it. And it's really not that long ago. It doesn't make sense
lefties,
to me.
So, you know, left
no.
wing and I guess.
Amazing, you know, if you think about whole vice squads were set up just to police homosexual activity.
What did they do? How do you police it? You stop that. Stop dancing to Wham. It's not, it doesn't exist yet, but stop dancing to it.
Jazz, well, probably jazz was dangerous too, remember?
Yeah.
That's right. Music was always, and it still is to some people. But what they would do is hang around beats, of course, and known homosexual hangouts, hotels and clubs. And the police would actually dress up in their finest clothing, mm-hmm. put on their aftershave, etc., etc., and then try. It was basically entrapment.
Mm. But they look good.
They looked good while they were doing it. But the other thing is just it's insidious. Is they used to obviously back in the 50s and 60s, house parties were all the rage because one, you had the 6 o'clock swill bottle shops. You know, there was no such thing as drinking in bars after 6 o'clock. So basically, you headed to someone's house and you had a party there. And so police would actually try to get themselves invited along to these parties. And then once anything out of untoward started happening, bang, out came the badges.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Badges? Oh, I was thinking of little fairy badges.
Oh, well, I was thinking something completely different.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that happened too.
You're listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We are talking to Rachel Klook. See, when you've got closets for clothes, you're now Rachel Klook.
Do you know how often I write Rachel C-O-K? Rachel Cock? And then I'm like, hang on a second.
No, it's Rachel Freudian slip from the closet.
It is. Now, let's talk about, we're talking about underground events and the house parties. There was Val's Coffee Shop. Now, I've heard a little bit about it. Can you tell me a bit more about it, what it was and what it actually did in the community?
Okay, Val Eastwood was basically a bit of a name around town in the party scene back in the 40s and 50s. She was also a part-time model. She was quite beautiful. She had, actually, Helmut Lang took photos of her, extraordinary photos of her. Basically, Val decided to open up a coffee shop because everyone used to party at her flat, and she got sick and tired of waking up in the morning and stepping over people who were drunk. And that's the actual fact. That's why she opened up her own venue. Val's actually became well known not just in Melbourne. It's where all the theatre people went. It's where the gays went, where the camps went, is what they were called then. And it's also was where anyone who was considered a bit different, bohemian, for example, Valley Myers was always there dancing on tables. And so Val basically ran this establishment where they actually did drink coffee. That's what they did in those days. And that's where a lot of people who were camp met, and they met either partners there or they met their friends there, and it was a place where they could be themselves, the only place or one of the only places, and certainly the most popular. It was actually so popular, it was even listed in certain types of magazines in Europe. So the people were coming over from Paris for, you know, if they possibly performers, they would know that after the show they would head down to Val's. So Val's was an institution that was really quite special and something in the 50s. And unfortunately, Val actually just passed away last December.
Oh, I didn't realise.
And just as a side thing, there's actually been a book called The Travelling Mind of Val Eastwood, which has been put together by the Lesbian and Gay Archives in Melbourne, which is just fascinating. It's a collection of Val's writings, her short stories, which are actually really good, and also an interview which historian Ruth Ford did with her, which is just fascinating. The interview is just fascinating in terms of, you know, we can sometimes tend to perhaps think that people were a lot more closeted or a lot more afraid in those decades than they actually were. People were actually living quite happy out there and outrageous lives. They weren't all terribly closeted. Some of them were absolutely out and proud, and Val was one of them.
Because you have this picture, you don't have the suits and the ties and the housewife kind of mum. You don't really have the picture of the drag queen walking down Spencer Street in the 40s and 50s. Do you, Sonia?
No, I do now. Yeah. It's intriguing.
Thanks for that. What about the bohemian people? Were there a lot of guys and girls cross-dressing, and that was it a popular thing?
Well, I guess especially among gay men, drag was huge. You know, drag was something that happened at all of the house parties, and I don't know if so much of it happened at Vels. I mean, there was still, if you have to remember, there was still in a time where the police were really cracking down on homosexual activities, so maybe not so much that, maybe after the coffee shop closed, because she would have lock-ins where she would close and then the party would go on late afterwards. Certainly there were, Butch and Femme for lesbians was certainly happening then. And women were hassled, but I guess to a certain extent, as it always has been, it's been a lot easier for a woman to get around in pants than it has for a man to get around in a dress. But certainly cross-dressing was something that's been happening for women and men from the beginning of time, I'd say.
Well, I was thinking about my grandma, and she just, a woman never wore trousers.
Unless they're in the army, in the military forces.
In the military forces, which actually I want to get into
popular.
Soon. Mm. Why don't we play a little bit of a song?
Yes.
And then we're going to come back, because I want to talk about the movement around the army time and the women and what they were doing in that time. That'd be great. We are talking to Rachel Cook here on Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Hear Me Roar. We were just listening to Diana Krall from her album Quiet Nights, and that was the classic song Walk On By.
That was beautiful. I loved that one. Now we are talking to Rachel Cook about her book Closets Are For Clothes, A History of Queer Australia. But prior to that song, we're just talking a little bit about the war and the impact of war on women. So I really want to cover the impact of the war on women and the impact of war on the lesbians, which is... not that women aren't lesbians or lesbians aren't women, but there are two kind of issues at hand here. See, one is the suburban housewife actually getting out of the house and doing things, you know, and being a bit more independent. And then perhaps I'm thinking more about the lesbians being sort of pushed into populate, you know, have to get married and all that sort of social dilemma.
Yeah, there was a number of tragic stories of women who realised that they were lesbians either prior to going in to the force or during, and met their partners. Some of them loves of their lives, and realised that these affairs could really only go on for the duration of the war. So it was this really strange time, as you were saying, also for straight women, because for all women, all of a sudden they had a purpose outside of the home. They were earning money, they had control over their own lives in a way they hadn't had before. And so for a lot of women, of course, they wanted the war to end, but they didn't necessarily want what the war had given them to end. So when the men came back, most of them had to give their jobs up for the men, and were expected to, if they weren't married, to marry and have children. And, of course, this was for lesbians as well, because we have to remember that even though for gay men the laws were what they had to combat a lot of the time, for women their own sort of private hells were that they could never actually be financially independent. Well, a lot of them couldn't. So a lot of lesbians had to marry and had to have children because there was just no way they were going to be able to survive without a man. So there were these really tragic times after the war, pretty soon after the war. Some women, of course, did have the means and were able to go on and live their lives as lesbians and have partners and I guess be considered as probably, you know, two spinsters living together.
I love that. I love that. That's just so sweet. And now you go, oh, my goodness, they were lesbians. It was a bit of a revelation for me. And I worked it out later. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot of films in the 50s, set in the 50s, that have come out recently that examine that, like A Far Country and recently that television series Mad Men has dealt with lesbian characters who was, you know, sort of pushed into the closet, wear all the glamorous clothes and act straight, but...
Yes,
are tormented.
Yeah, I was just. It is quite amazing, but at the same time, yes, I think that that sort of taste of freedom for women that came during the Second World War lingered with some women, and perhaps, you know, for some of them, it really was the basis of the feminist movement of the late 60s and 70s. So, you know, a lot was going to change in lots of different ways after the Second World War for women. That's for sure.
It certainly did. I mean, it just gave them the independence they needed. I mean, war is a horrible, horrible thing, but the offset of that was something that I guess I hadn't thought about in that way until I looked at your book, which was really interesting. House husbands. You mentioned house husbands in your book also.
Female husbands.
Female husbands. Yes. Did I say house husband? Stupid woman. Female husbands.
Female husbands, yes. This is fascinating. As you were talking about cross-dressing before, and cross-dressing has been going on for a very, very long time and for lots of different reasons. For some women, during even like the 18th and 19th and 20th century, they actually cross-dressed and passed as men. Some of them did for reasons of financial independence. Some did so they wouldn't have to get married, and some, you know, we can be quite sure would have done it because they wanted to be with their female partners, and it was a way of living respectively. It was quite amazing, actually, how many women actually passed, and when you look at photos of them, you think, wow, you know. And but, of course, you know, back in those days, and to a certain extent now, people don't question. You know, you're not going to question someone, and it was always, and especially back then, it was seen as being terribly rude. And so if you had any thoughts about someone, then you might keep it to yourself. So, for example, or they might use excuses such as if they were ever questioned about their voice, well, it was just basically because you could, maybe this person was younger, because obviously not having a beard, lots of these women who passed as men looked a lot younger than they actually were, and were thought it was being younger men. We have examples of someone like Edward de Lacy Evans, for example, who married three times. And there was even actually a child amongst that mixed somehow. And Edward actually passed until I think it was...
So Edward was a woman?
Yes,
right,
Alan Tremé. And in 1879, he was committed to Kew's mental asylum, and it was there where they forced him to take a bath, where they discovered that he had female anatomy. And then, of course, all hell broke loose for Edward. He then, after a couple of years, spent a few years as a sideshow freak, basically, you know, the woman who passed as a man. And then actually spent his last years as the gardener back at the mental asylum, not actually as a patient, as the gardener, and apparently lived out quite happily his years there.
That's quite a sad story, though, isn't it? I mean, just to be... I mean, so many people are persecuted because of their sexuality, but just... to be living quite happily and then to be completely uprooted and then put in an immense mental institution. It's just incredible, our history. And that's what I'm really pleased that you've done, that you've brought in Australian history with the queer twist, which is really nice, because it just isn't out there. Well, it hasn't been out there until now. What about current history? How do you see, are we making history today, or are we a bit complacent in general?
Oh, I think that the history of the last few years has been phenomenal. You know, the 85 laws that were changed when Rudd became Prime Minister, that's just astounding. There was really, you know, Mardi Gras, the first Mardi Gras in 1978, which was, in a sense, in Australia, the real beginning of our gay movement, which then became, you know, as terminology has changed, the gay and lesbian movement to the queer movement. Obviously, we've realised we have to start becoming a lot more encompassing than we were before. And basically, I think that we weren't organised as activists. It took a long time to get organised. So even though we were having all of these discussions in the late 60s and 70s about what needed to change, that laws had to change, that societal attitudes had to change, we weren't organised in a way of realising how we could go about doing this. And now, of course, you know, we know our lobby groups and our activists are so savvy, whether it comes to being politically or media-wise, they're actually affecting major changes in quite a small amount of time. It's astounding.
Because you do kind of think, don't you, Sonia, that you think, I can't really make that much of a change, I'm only one person.
But you'll be amazed at the conversations. I take public transport, and a friend of mine takes public transport too. And she said, just recently that people, the very straight people out there, footy type of people, footy supporters, are actually, you know, talking and discussing about it. Whether they're discussing the gay marriage issue negatively is not the point. They're talking about it.
But it is in the papers, like The Age.
Mm. And it's also in the papers. But people are chatting about it and having their disagreements and arguments about it in the streets.
That's really good.
I think it's interesting, you know, you just mentioned The Age. When you read articles that are about gay marriage or queer rainbow families or queer issues or whatever they may be, and then you read the comments that come after it, that generally this might not always apply to maybe the Herald Sun, but generally the majority of comments are pro rights for gays and lesbians, rainbow families, for same-sex marriage, for all of these issues, which is incredibly heartening. It certainly wouldn't have been the case 20 years ago.
No, but they still do the polls, don't they? You know, do you think gay marriage should be legal? And then you get on there and you do the poll, and the numbers are astounding as to who's voting against it. I do those, and then I sort of email my friends. Get on there and just do one. You know, like it'd be 60,000 to 20,000 or something people. It's just not those numbers exactly, but you know what I mean. It's just, I just find it astounding that there's still such a high amount of people.
Well, you know, in the Galaxy poll a few years ago, it was the you know, which a poll that is generally quite trusted, that showed that the majority of Australians do support the idea of same-sex marriage. I guess, you know, we can't take newspaper polls too seriously. But
or the Herald Sun.
That's exactly right. But I think that, yeah, there is a definite shift in Australians' mainstream society acceptance and tolerance and wish for equal treatment of queers. But unfortunately, those who are against us have very loud voices.
They have, but we're longer and stronger. I was going to ask, my mind's gone blank now. Do you think, of the 85 laws, do you think that any really stand out for you as a woman?
Definitely, I think, in terms of superannuation, so that so my partner would have access to that without having to go through any sort of legal battle. Inheritance claims, a big one for me, it's not personally affects me at all, but is Veterans Affairs. You know, we have these horrific stories of people who fought or possibly even gave their lives for this country in times of war, and their partners got absolutely nothing and no recognition or anything at monetary gain at all. I think that is a huge one for a lot of people. And I think that basically that we now can be recognised as couples because, you know, mainly the laws affected couples. There's still a long way to go in terms of changing federal laws in terms of discrimination. But for a lot of couples now, you know, you can be recognised with nearly all of the same rights of heterosexual couples. And, you know, as I said before, that this we came a long way in a very short amount of time in terms of big changes.
And we're still on a journey and we are going to get further and further. And thanks to your book, kids are going to know a bit more and perhaps be able to act upon the knowledge of what you've put down. So well done, you. Fabulous.
Thanks
love
very
it.
Much.
Love it, long time.
That's great.
Love it. Sonia, thank you for joining us on Hear Me Roar.
That's fine by me. I'm happy about that.
I love having Sonia on. She's a gem. Thanks, Rachel. So where can people get your book?
Yes.
Hares and Hyenas, of course. So I think readings, Borders, all over the place, as far as I know. But, of course, we should support our local queer bookstore, and that's Hares and Hyenas.
Thanks for joining us. And I'm going to follow up that interview with Ruth...
Ford.
Yeah. See if we can wangle a bit of an airplay. That'll be really good for everybody to hear that. So I'll contact the Gay and Lesbian Archives. You've been listening to Hear Me Roar on Joy 94.9. We'll be back here next week. Thanks, Sonia.
Thank you.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.